Right, we are picking up this morning in Acts chapter 14. Acts 14 and 8 is where we're starting this morning. And while y'all getting there, still just a little bit of review. We are starting out here in verse 8 in Lystra. Does anybody remember why we're starting out in Lystra this week? What happened last week?
Some of the Jews decided to try to get rid of Paul.
All right, some of the Jews decided to get rid of Paul again. Okay, so we've had where were they? Back in 49, where were they? It was something. It was two names, I think. And then they had to run out of there because the Jews stirred up the God-fearing women. And then they went to Iconium at the start of 14. And in Iconium, they stirred up some trouble, not intentionally, but they got some trouble, and then the Jews refused to believe, stirred up other Gentiles, and ran them out of Iconium. And so now here we are in verse 8 in Lystra, and what is it that they're doing there? And in the very end, verses 6 and 7 of what we went over last week, what are they doing here in Lystra? Right, continuing to proclaim the news, continuing to preach the gospel. They are not put out, not downtrodden by what they've had happen to them. They've been run out a couple times. They've had some good success because getting run out is a measure of how successful they've been. But they've made converts. We know that churches have formed in these places because a little later on it talks about going through and appointing elders and stuff at some of these places. So they've had a good measure of success, but on the other hand, they've had a good measure of word for that?
Persecution.
Not quite the direction I'm going, but definitely persecution. Yeah, they've riled up a bunch of people, and they've made enemies as well as friends. So here we are, in verse 8. And we're just going to read a little bit here, verse 8 through 13. Go and read that. It says, "In Lystra there sat a man who was lame. He had been that way from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul as he was speaking. Paul looked directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed, and called out, 'Stand up on your feet.' At that the man jumped up and began to walk. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they shouted in the Lyconian language, 'The gods have come down to us in human form.' Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul they called Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. The priest of Zeus, whose temple was just outside the city, brought bulls and wreaths to the city gates because he and the crowd wanted to offer sacrifices to them." Okay, so they're in Lystra, and they're preaching the gospel as was their desire, their goal, as was their mission. Who did they find?
A crippled man.
A crippled man, okay. And what... they found a cripple, but who found whom? Did they find the cripple, or did the cripple find them? Put it that way.
Well, he was where they were preaching him.
Okay. And what did he have?
Faith to be healed.
Okay, faith to be healed. That's an odd kind of connection to make for Paul to look out and say, "Hey, there's this guy out there, and I can tell he's got the faith to be healed." Now, is that exactly what ran through Paul's mind? That guy has faith to be healed. Do you suppose? I don't suppose that's quite exactly what Paul was thinking when he looked at that man. All that's the outcome. What did Paul actually see when he looked at that man?
Well, the Spirit had to inform Paul of what was in the man's heart. But Paul saw a crippled man.
Okay, Paul saw a crippled man. He saw faith. He saw what the Spirit was leading him to see. When that man was looking up at Paul, what do you suppose he was thinking? You suppose he was thinking, I want to be healed. This is how I'm going to get healed. Well, it could be. I look at it from the other perspective that he probably wasn't in there looking to be healed. He may have been, but if you have faith to be healed, that doesn't necessarily mean that's what you're looking for.
No, his faith was increasing, and probably an awareness that there was hope, not at that moment maybe, but there was hope for him in his life.
Yes, there was hope for him in life, and again, I don't necessarily think that would mean that I need to be healed, but that there are better things in life, and that leads to faith. And whether he was looking at Paul saying, I think this guy can heal me, because up to this point, how many miracles do we have reference to Paul making? There were a couple last week. It said that the Spirit allowed him or whatever, that the Lord allowed him to do some miracles. But we don't have a huge number of miracles performed by Paul, and unlike, say, Peter, where Peter had a huge reputation of healing and people just wanted to be in his shadow. Peter was a great miracle worker to a lot of people. That's what they saw Peter as. And I'm not saying they didn't see Paul that way, because Paul is part of that same movement, that same culture, that same group of people who do these things. Peter is a Christian, Paul's a Christian. Well, maybe that means that there's a reason that I can be healed here. But I may be less cynical than I thought I was, but when I look at this story, I don't necessarily see, it says Paul looked and saw the man had faith to be healed. I don't read that as meaning Paul looked at the guy and said, that guy wants to be healed. I that guy has faith. And because he has faith, I can do something good through him. Maybe he was out there looking for it, but I don't know. Maybe lots of maybes. Either way, so there's a layman. Paul is speaking, and the man is there paying attention. He's watching Paul. He's intently listening. He's trying to pick this up and grasp it. He has faith to be healed, which means he's picked up more than just a little bit of the message. He's understanding there's something pretty great and spectacular about this. He's growing, he's eating it up, he's enjoying it. He has faith enough to be healed, and so Paul calls out to him, stand up on your feet. And the man, no hesitation, he has the faith. He knows that Paul can do what he says to be done here. So he stands up, man jumps up and begins to walk. Okay, so that's the first part of the little story here. So this connection is made, the man has faith. The man is healed. What happens in the people? What reaction does this interaction cause in the people?
The gods have come among us. They attribute it to their gods that they have.
Right. They attribute it to their gods. The gods are among us, and not the god, but the gods, plural, as in which gods do they attribute this to?
Zeus and Hermes.
Okay, Zeus and Hermes. Okay. So, who was Zeus and who was Hermes?
They're Greek gods. Zeus was the king of the gods. Hermes is the messenger of the gods. And there are a lot of stories of Zeus and Hermes wandering the earth, checking out how people are doing.
Okay, so the king of the gods and his messenger, and they say, well, Paul and Barnabas, you guys are Zeus and Hermes. You are our elite gods, okay? And which one did they say was Zeus and which one did they say was Hermes?
Paul is Hermes because he talks a lot.
Okay, Paul is Hermes because he talks a lot. Now, I think maybe I'm looking into this too much. Maybe I'm doing that a lot today. But if you look at the two gods that they attribute these men to, what does that tell us about Paul and Barnabas' relationship? Ben just said Paul talks a lot, okay? So he's Hermes because he talks a lot. If he's going to be a god, he must be the messenger. And Barnabas, therefore, is Zeus. So what does that indicate about the relationship between Paul and Barnabas and how they're doing this?
Well, we hear a lot about Paul, but it looks like Barnabas is in charge.
Right. So just a couple weeks ago, we transitioned from the story being about Barnabas and Saul, and we transitioned to the story being about Paul and Barnabas. And there's a lot of big deal made about that, because Paul goes on from there and in a lot of ways becomes a major architect of Christianity. A lot of what we attribute to the church today comes down from Paul's letters, from his writings. And a large part of that we mark as that turning point right there, where it goes from Barnabas and Saul to Paul and Barnabas. And yet here we have the people looking around and they say, well, that guy talks a lot, that guy's his boss. And so I think there's a little bit of indication here that even though in Luke's writing, Paul is mentioned preeminently most of the time, or a large part of the time from here on, there's still this indication that Paul looks to Barnabas as a source of whatever. Paul looks at Barnabas and says, this is a guy who I respect. Barnabas did great things for Paul. A long time ago, when Paul first arrived in Jerusalem, Barnabas introduced him to the disciples, the apostles. There's lots of indications that Barnabas stood up for Paul and tried to make the best of Paul, best for Paul of Paul. And the indication here to me is that Paul is still looking to Barnabas, even though he's the one doing all the talking now. He's the one out there in front. He's the one making waves. He's still looking to Barnabas, and these people see that Barnabas is the guy who's got a little more time on him. Barnabas is the guy who knows what's going on, even though Paul is the one out there being the mover and the shaker and making all the noise. So it's easy to overlook Barnabas after the story shifts from Barnabas and Saul to Paul and Barnabas, but I don't think that Paul overlooked Barnabas, and I think we still need to remember the great man that he was, even though he doesn't have the amount of recognition later on that Paul does. Okay, so what made these people so forceful in their determination of Paul and Barnabas' identities?
They healed a lame man. That is totally in the realm of the gods, because no man can do that.
Okay, they healed a lame man. That's out of the realm of mortals, into the realm of gods. And I would say, based on the few stories I know about Zeus, it's kind of out of Zeus's realm too. That's not the kind of thing he did a lot of. He was more of most of those guys were more of kind of tricksters in one degree or another. Not that they never did anything nice.
Hermes did have a certain control over medicine and such. That's why he had the Caduceus staff.
Okay, so Hermes had a little bit of reputation for that, but even so, I don't know. So why is it that these people, they've been listening? I think I'm going to jump over one of the questions here. They've been listening to the story. The crowd, I'm assuming the crowd has been listening to the story that Paul's preaching, the message that Paul's preaching. How do they jump to this conclusion that these are our gods, not whatever Paul's talking about? This is more to do with human nature than anything specific.
You're also dealing with, there's an entire crowd here, and we don't know how many of the crowd were actually listening. Some people were listening. The lame man was almost certainly listening. But how much of the rest of the crowd is listening is much more debatable. On the other hand, once you hear, hey, look, the lame guy's walking, everybody's going to turn and look. It is a difference in human nature, is what people want to pay attention to, what people want to listen to. You know, in my classroom at school, all the time, if I'm teaching, there's a good chance a lot of them are trying very hard not to pay attention. But if someone does something out of the ordinary, then everyone's attention automatically gets riveted on that person.
Right. So we have the people here, we have the crowd, right? When the crowd saw what Paul had done. So Paul is there talking, and it doesn't say, most of the previous times where it says that Paul and Barnabas walk into the town, where do they go to do their preaching?
Synagogue.
A synagogue. Okay, where does it say here that they went to the synagogue? It doesn't. Okay, so there may not have been a synagogue here. Maybe it wasn't on a Saturday. But I don't know what the deal is specifically here, but it doesn't look like they're in a synagogue preaching. They're out in a crowded street or whatever. So, yes, there's the people there. There's the lame man who can't get up and walk away, but he doesn't care. He's getting something great out of it. And there are people that are going to be listening and paying attention. There's probably going to be a lot of people walking by and just kind of, oh, there's somebody up on a soapbox yelling, whatever. And so, yeah, we have the crowd seeing what happened. And so they don't have anything to attribute it to because they haven't been paying attention. And so they attribute it to Zeus and Hermes because that's their point of reference. That's where they all know the lame man. He always sits there. He can't get up and walk. Probably gets taunted by teens or whatever, and he doesn't run away. So yeah, he can't walk. He's lame. And so then we have these two guys who've healed him. The two guys that heal him. So the point of reference that they have is their Greek gods. Is what their Greek or Roman, either way. Okay, so for moving on, verses 14 through 20 to finish up this story and the conclusion, see what happens here. Nathaniel, would you mind reading verses 14 through 20 for us, please?
14-20?
Yes, sir. Acts 14:14 through 20.
When the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of this, they tore their clothes and rushed out into the crowd, shouting, "Men, why are you doing this? We too are only men, human like you. We are bringing you good news, telling you to turn from these worthless things to the living God, who made heaven and earth and sea and everything in them. In the past, he let all nations go their own way. Yet he has not left himself without testimony. He has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy. Even with these words, they had difficulty keeping the crowd from sacrificing to them. Then some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. But after the disciples had gathered around him, he got up and went back into the city. The next day, he and Barnabas left for Derbe."
Thank you. Okay, so we have the reaction of the crowd, up to even the crowd fetch the priests in verse 13. The priests of Zeus, whose temple is just out of the city, brought bowls and wreaths to the city gates because he and the crowd wanted to offer sacrifices to Paul and Barnabas. And then we have here in verse 14 the reaction of, first off, how does it refer to them? I just said it, but how does it refer to these two guys?
Apostles.
Okay, so we know that Paul's an apostle. He claims he's be an apostle in his letters, and there's lots of indications that Paul's an apostle. And the indication, every version I looked at said apostles here. So the indication is that Barnabas has that same level of respect, of knowledge, of understanding that Paul and Peter and John and the other guys there all have. That Barnabas is included in this rank and file of apostles. We don't have a proper commissioning of him like we do Matthias there after Judas's betrayal, but the indication here is that Barnabas is at that same level as these other guys, which again he'd almost have to be for Paul to.
If we go back to when the Holy Spirit chose Paul and Barnabas there in the Church of Antioch. So that is, so to speak, the commissioning of both of them in that role as apostles, because the word apostle itself just means sent out.
Right.
Those who were sent out. So Paul and Barnabas were sent out by the Church of Antioch, and Paul does have the distinction of being chosen by Jesus. Barnabas does not have that distinction. But he was chosen by the Holy Spirit and by the elders of the Church of Antioch to be an apostle.
Right. And again, that point I made several months ago, probably, maybe in the last schedule cycle I was on, that the decentralization of the church, it's not just about Jerusalem, but the church is open and available to anybody. Barnabas wasn't necessarily following Jesus around the whole time as the initial 12 apostles were, but he can still be an apostle, and that's a rank and a file that's open to anyone as long as it's the Spirit's will. Okay, so the apostles have a reaction, and again, who are the apostles referenced here?
Barnabas and Paul,
not Barnabas and Saul, and not Paul and Barnabas, but Barnabas and Paul. So I'm not sure if this is a spot here where Barnabas takes the lead and says, "This is wrong, Paul, we need to do something about this," or if Luke just flips him around that way for this time or whatever. I'm assuming that Luke has an intent in the way he does everything here. Most authors pay attention to what they're doing, and if they don't, their editor does. But the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard this, reaction from the crowd, and how did they react? What did they do about it?
Tore their clothes and ran out in the crowd.
Tore their clothes and ran out into the crowd. Okay. And was that it? That's a big part of it, because you see somebody doing that, that's going to make you take notice and say, whoop, something's going on. What else?
They were frantic trying to get them to stop. It sounds like they were, their message had been twisted, and they didn't want that at all. And they were there for to bring God and the Lord to these people, and these people had it all wrong.
Right. They are... The word mom said frantic. Yeah, that's a good word there. Frantic to get these people to stop. Hey, don't do this. We're only human. We're not gods. We're not anything. And I don't know if it took them time to figure out what was going on, because there was obviously time for the priest to get some bowls and stuff to bowls and wreaths to the city gates. And the indication is that happens before Barnabas and Paul do this. Maybe I'm just reading too much into Luke's timeline here, but. It would be easy enough for them to miss what's going on, because they're just talking to the lame man, whatever, and then all of a sudden they realize, whoa, somebody just brought bulls and they're trying to sacrifice to him. This isn't what's going to happen. Okay, so they're frantically running around. I imagine it says shouting. I imagine shouting at the top of their lungs as loud as they can. Whoa, guys, you need to stop doing this. We're not gods. We're just humans. We're trying to bring you good news, which... not the news you guys know. This is something better. Okay, so how much of the preaching did the crowd seem to have picked up? And we already talked about this a little bit before, but...
not a whole lot, it seems like.
Yeah, not a whole lot. Yeah, the individuals, maybe they picked up what was going on, but the crowd in general, they hadn't picked up this good news, hadn't picked up the gospel, hadn't understood or hadn't caught, hadn't heard. They'd been too busy trying to sell their fish or whatever was going on there. They hadn't caught the good news. And so, last ditch effort, Barnabas and Paul running through the crowds, clothes torn, in a state of frantic intent, whatever you want to call it there, trying to get the people to understand that what they're doing is wrong. You don't offer sacrifices to men. And this is some point that anytime we have angels appearing to men and the men fall down at their knees, the angels make a big point. No, stand up. We're just servants like you. We're nothing special to be worshipped. And Barnabas and Paul here the exact same way. No, don't worship us. Don't get down and don't offer sacrifices. We're just men. There's nothing about us to be worshipped. Instead, What does Paul say about what actually needs to be worshipped? What actually needs to be gloried and sacrificed? Well, not sacrificed. What actually needs to be the point here?
The living God.
The living God, right? Not these made up things that you think maybe came down and healed somebody, but the living God. What does Paul say about God's past interactions with the nations? I think it's an interesting point here he makes in 16.
Basically, that in the past God let people wander where they wanted to go, more or less, but now he wants to bring them together.
Right. In the past, he let all nations go their own way. He let everybody do whatever they wanted. And there's a interesting idea that yes, he was the God of the Jews. He was in Israel. He was making himself known in Israel. But at the same time, just a couple weeks ago, we had in the synagogue the Jews and the who?
Gentiles.
Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles. Does that mean God let them go their own way and so they were absolved of everything?
No.
Paul's next point here, he says, in the past he let all nations go their own way, and yet what?
He showed you kindness with giving you crops and taking care of you.
Right. He has not left himself without testimony. He showed kindness. He gave you rain from heaven, crops in this season, provides you with plenty of food, and fills your hearts with joy. And if joy isn't an indication of a greater presence out there, I don't know what is. Because where would that come from any other way? There's no explaining something like joy. That doesn't make any sense. You get this feeling in your gut or whatever that there's great things happening. That doesn't make any sense. But in the past, he let each nation go their own way. Not that there was no indicators for them, because again, we have Israel referred to several times as a light to the world. You will be a light to the nations to show them that there is a God, that there is something better, even though he's not making himself felt there like he was in Israel. They were that light that's supposed to indicate to the nations around them that there was something greater, something more purposeful for them.
Paul also makes a very similar point at the end of the first chapter of Romans, where he says God's invisible qualities have been made obvious since the creation. And we look out and we say there's rain because we need rain. There's crops that grow because we need crops that grow. And at the end of the day, no man can explain why things grow. You know, we know how to make things grow, but why? And it's because God takes care of his creation that all of these things happen. And we can see that all over the place. And that's really the point he's making here, which is another of those indications, along with the lack of a synagogue, that pretty much everyone he's speaking to here is a Gentile. This does not seem to be a place where there were Jews pretty much at all.
Right, and that goes right into my next question, which I've already asked more or less, but how do you get the faith of the lame man on one hand and then the total lack of understanding immediately following? Well, because these people weren't versed in the base truths that Paul often had to work with. Just not too long ago, Paul had said to the Jews, "You guys turn us away, and so we will be that light to the Gentiles." Says the back in 1347, "The Lord has commanded us, I made you a light to the Gentiles, that you may bring salvation to the ends of the earth." And that's what they're doing. That's what they're out there trying to do right now. They're out there being that light to the Gentiles. And so they don't have that easy starting point of going into the synagogue and quoting from Isaiah and quoting from Psalms and saying, "This is what's happening now, guys." They're out there now talking to people who believe in Zeus and Hermes, who have never done anything for humankind. They don't exist. How can they do anything? They're just imagined whatevers. And so these people are offering sacrifices that have no benefit. They're doing these things, and most times those kind of religions are pretty lax, and you can get away with whatever you want. And that's who they're preaching to now. That's who they're talking to. So you do have the lame man who looks and says, "This is something that I've never seen before. This is something I want to be a part of." And on the other hand, you have the crowd who says, "Something great's happening. Let's do whatever we can to get in on that." So you have the dichotomy, if you will. You have the two sides of it here, of the total belief and faith of the man who's actually paying attention, and the total misunderstanding and corruption, if you will, of the people who weren't paying a lot of attention, who just dropping down to the base level of understanding and trying to make a go of things from where they think things should be. All right, so dropping down to 19, who ultimately turns the situation around and why?
Jews,
okay. Jews to the rescue, right?
Yeah, totally rescued.
Jews full of spite.
Okay, Jews came from where?
Antioch
and Iconium. Where have I heard those names before? Oh, that was last week and the week before. That was where they just got run out of. That was the two places there that we have reference to where Barnabas and Saul, or Paul and Barnabas, however we're talking about them, they went in and they preached in the synagogue and they made great results. In the first place, if I remember right, a bunch of the Jews said, "This is great," until all the Gentiles turned and the Jews said, "No, we can't have that," because they had their nice little system set up and they didn't want it changed. And so they have gone on from there and incited the people against Paul and Barnabas. So those Jews show up now, just, "Hey, we heard this Paul guy was coming around and we really don't like him." And so the Jews came from Antioch and Iconium. And what does it say they did to the crowd?
Won them over.
They won the crowd over. Okay, and I don't know how that may have been. We have stories later on about interactions between people already invested in their gods and their pagan gods, and they turned around and say, "Well, this is how things are supposed to be, and they're taking away from the treasuries or whatever of the bar gods and different ways of looking at it, saying we don't want to go to their gods. And then from the Jews coming at this, I don't know how the Jews would go into it. Maybe they're pretending not. I don't think a Jew could pretend to not be a Jew in that culture and day, because there were things about it. But the Jews come from Antioch and Iconium. They won the crowd over, where they're saying these guys have misled you. Look at that. They pretended to perform a miracle, and they tried to get you in an uproar about your gods, and tried to turn them to their gods, and these guys can't be trusted. Whatever the course of action the Jews took there, they won the crowd over. And where did it go from there? Okay, they stoned Paul. I don't know if this means they got the crowd to stone Paul, or if just the Jews themselves said, we'll take care of this for you, and they stoned Paul. That was a very Jewish kind of punishment. I don't know how much outside of Judaism it was. But they stoned Paul, dragged him out of the city, thinking that he was dead, with the intent of having him dead and done with. No more to worry about him. What does it say the disciples did to help Paul while all this was going down? It doesn't say they did anything. Is that any kind of a negative reflection on the disciples?
No. In this particular case, in the way this works, there's a good chance that this all happened pretty quick, and there probably wasn't a lot of time for them to do anything to help Paul. I'm sure that Barnabas didn't just stand by and watch. You know, that's not the kind of guy he was. But this has the way that it reads, this is all fairly quick and probably unexpected.
All right. Real quick, and at the same token, could the disciples have done it? As quick as it was, it doesn't matter how quick it is. You've got people around, and Paul would have had people around. Barnabas would have been nearby. The people who'd been listening to him would have been nearby. Could they have done something? I'm a little more of the opinion that when Peter cut off the guard's ear as they were taking Jesus away, what did Jesus say?
Put
your gun away, huh? Put your swords away, yeah. I've not come to lead that kind of rebellion. That's not what I'm here about. And how many examples do we have of Christians being physically violent in the New Testament? Right, we don't.
There's been many times when they've done other things. Like, this is not the first time Paul has had to make a quick getaway.
Paul didn't make a quick getaway here.
No.
But we do have in the previous two stories, they made a quick escape. And Paul in, where was the first place?
The city in Antioch,
where the disciples let him out over the wall. So, yeah, there's been plenty of times where Paul has made a hasty retreat. Oh, you don't mean that one, but there are plenty of times where Paul has made a hasty retreat, and I think that again ties into the idea that Jesus was espousing there, that's not what he's doing. There were enough Christians that if they wanted to take over by force, they could have done some big time damage. They could have taken what they wanted. They could have been a major power, if not militarily, at least in the same sense that the Jews were, and that Rome eventually came and decimated them because they were a thorn in their side. But the Christians, if they'd wanted to, there was enough of them. They could have made major problems in that department. And yet they don't. And whether it's because they didn't have time, whether everything was going down too fast, or whether it's because they were non-aggressive. I'm not going to say passive, because I'm sure that Barnabas was there. Hey guys, you need to stop. This is wrong. No. This guy didn't do anything to deserve this. I'm sure there were plenty of people speaking out about this. But when you've got the crowd going like that, there's not much to do unless you're going to get in there and start knocking heads together.
They were probably trying to take cover. I mean, I can't imagine there being... This is probably the people that traveled with Paul and Barnabas, these disciples. I can't imagine it being a large group. And once somebody threw a rock and somebody else did, if the crowd, I don't know how big the crowd was, but if it was 20 to 30 people and they all picked something up and threw it, it would just be a matter of a minute or two before Paul was completely down and you know, you'd be taking cover.
Right. So, yeah, no, the disciples didn't, it doesn't indicate the disciples did anything here to stop this, anything more than what we can guess they would have done. But yeah, I don't think that's a problem. I think that is in line with the message that they were preaching, that they were telling the good news. They weren't trying to make a big problem. They weren't trying to cause stir up trouble. Okay, so the last bit I have here about this whole story here from verse 8 through 20, we have the lame man healed. We have the crowd rising up and trying to put their own spin on things. We have the apostles trying to clear things up. We have the Jews coming in and having Paul stoned. Ultimately, this healing of the lame man, was it a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it would ultimately be a good thing, because even after Paul and them left, he would remain there as a testimony.
Right. He remains as a testimony. And again, I'm pretty sure... Let's see, here we have in... Yeah, if we look down at 21, if we just skip to next week a little bit, look at verse 21. It says they left for Derbe, they preached the gospel in that city and won a large number of disciples. Then they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch. And again, if we just look at 22, why did they return to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch?
To check on the disciples, strengthen them,
and encourage them.
Right. So they won a large number of disciples in 21, and then they returned to the other cities to strengthen the disciples with encouragement, encouraging them to remain true to the faith. And in 23, Paul and Barnabas appointed elders for them in each church, and with prayer and fasting committed to them the Lord, in which they put their trust. Okay, so was this healing a good thing? Well, it had some negative results. What was the worst lasting result from this?
Paul had a headache.
Yeah, Paul got up and walked away. I don't think it was fun, but...
It's also possible that even though he got to walk away, he may have had some permanent damage from this.
Sure, he may have limped a certain way for the rest of his life. He may have had migraines for whatever. There's no saying what lasting impact there could have been, but...
This is one of the events that's talked about when Paul later writes and talks about the thorn in his flesh. It's possible from this event right here, where he was stoned to death. The fact that he got to walk afterwards isn't because they didn't stone him hard enough. It's because the Holy Spirit wasn't done with him yet. Yeah. And so, the worst part of this was totally personal for Paul. But it had lasting benefits for the lame man, for many of the people in the city. So.
Yeah. Again, we're talking about a city largely of Gentiles here who didn't have that base operationality of knowing the scriptures. And so I think there was large effect in having this miracle happen. In the city, how many miracles would the city have seen? Nope, not much. And so having this lasting reminder, there was that lame man that was healed by these guys talking about this new thing. That would have been a big impact on the city, on the people coming in and out, and it would have been something for them to remember for a long time. So yeah, there was huge negative consequences here immediately, but in the long run, it was, I don't think, a bad thing, a good thing. Paul doesn't seem to be downtrodden by it. He doesn't seem to be lose faith or lose heart or anything in it, and the disciples continue to grow and build to the point when they come back a little while later, they appoint elders because the church has grown to that point in such a short time. All right, so we'll pick up next week, somewhere in the 20s there, and thank you all for your time and attention today.